to distance themselves from Israeli atrocities.
The court rulings are a welcome boost for the Palestine solidarity movement in Europe, where concerns are growing over a breakdown on Palestine supporters. Following recent court decisions, it is believed the coming year will see more and more demonstrations for Gaza. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Iraq is marking the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. During an event attended by high-ranking Iraqi and Iranian officials, the two commanders were prized as a role model for all generations.
Today we stand alongside our Iranian brothers to remember our leaders General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, whose memories are engraved in our minds. And although they are gone physically, their thoughts are still with us.
Former Iraqi Prime Minister Nour al-Maliki admired the two leaders and their role in the fight against terrorism in the region. The chief of Iraq Popular Mobilization Units, Faleh al-Fayyad, also addressed the ceremony. He said the role of General Qasem Soleimani and his companion was essential in standing against Daesh. Several Iraqi lawmakers were also present at the event. They said the two commanders' determination to fight against terrorists irritated their backers.
Today we remember the pure souls that fought against terror and defeated something that made terror supporters mad. That's why they committed such a cowardly act of killing our leaders in Iraq.
They expect that by assassinating our leaders, they will weaken our resistance, but they have failed to achieve their goals, and even after committing their cowardly act, it did nothing more than adding strength to us.
The attendees also condemned the latest attacks on anti-terror forces in Iraq and Syria, which led to the martyrdom of Sayyid Razi Mousawi. They demanded an immediate end to the U.S. military presence in Iraq, and they argued that this is the only solution to stop the continuous attacks on Iraqi forces and end violations against Iraq's sovereignty. They also expressed their solidarity with the Palestinians and condemned the Israeli war on Gaza. A huge crowd have gathered today to commemorate the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Al-Hajj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. The legacy of the anti-terror icons continue to live on, inspiring people in the region to stand up for the oppressed. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
In the limelight.
With few hospitals functioning in Gaza, because the Zionist regime has bombed virtually all of them, there is desperate shortage of medicines and even electricity. The case of children with smashed limbs is extremely painful. There is no anesthesia in the few hospitals that are still functioning. Children's limbs have to be amputated without anesthesia. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International Road, more than 21,000 civilians have been killed in Gaza by the Zionist regime war criminals since October 7th. They can be considered lucky. After all, their suffering is over, even if they have left behind grieving relatives. Among the dead are more than 8,000 children. And there are at least 7,000 Palestinians, many of them women and children, buried under the rubble of collapsed buildings. There is no heavy equipment to lift the huge concrete slabs to find out if they are still alive. There is another aspect of their suffering that needs to be told. Under relentless Israeli regime bombardments, many children have suffered horrific injuries. These range from deep wounds to their bodies to badly smashed limbs that have to be amputated. With few hospitals functioning in Gaza because the Zionist regime has bombed virtually all of them, there is desperate shortage of medicines and even electricity. The case of children with smashed limbs is extremely painful. There is no anesthesia in the few hospitals that are still functioning. Children's limbs have to be amputated without anesthesia. Some 1,000 children have had their limbs amputated without anesthesia in Gaza since October 7th, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has said. One can imagine the pain these children must have endured and continue to endure. They have suffered triple pain, loss of parents in Israeli regime bombings, personal injuries, some of which, especially to the limbs, are so severe that they have to be amputated. And finally, because of the Zionist regime's destruction of most hospitals and total siege of Gaza, amputations take place without anesthesia. The screams of children being held down while surgeons amputate their limbs is unbearable for most people. Naturally, young children cry for their parents under such circumstances, but they are already dead. Their relatives try to distract them. Take the case of 4-year-old Ahmad. His family home was bombed twice. He lost both his parents. He was badly injured and both his legs had to be amputated. He constantly cries for his mother and father. His uncle, who has now become his guardian, tries to distract him and make him forget about his parents. How could a 4-year-old child forget his parents? At this tender age, they are his entire world. Gaza's doctors continue their struggle in these most trying circumstances. Nurse Abu Ahmad Hossanein recalled how he stitched up the head wound of a little girl without anesthesia in Ash-Sharif Hospital as she screamed, "Mommy, Mommy!" He described this as one of the worst moments of his career. The case of a Gaza doctor is even more painful. He had to amputate his child's legs without anesthesia. After the amputation, the child died of pain as his father watched helplessly. The Zionist regime war criminals are directly responsible for these barbaric acts. They are amply supplied by the United States that has provided these savages with military weapons to continue the genocide of the civilian population of Gaza. The Ministry of Health in Gaza says that nearly 70% of casualties are children and women. The death toll has surpassed 21,000. The actual figure is much higher. Nearly 55,000 people have been injured, according to Health Ministry spokesperson Ashraf Al-Ghudra. There is also acute shortage of food, clean drinking water and other essential commodities of life. Meanwhile, Middle East Eye wrote, more than 1,000 children in Gaza have had one or more limbs amputated since the Zionist regime's onslaught on the besieged area began on October 7th, with many undergoing the procedure without anesthesia, the United Nations Children's Fund UNICEF revealed recently. James Elder, a UNICEF spokesperson, reported that children in Gaza were enduring 10 weeks of hell and not one of them can escape. Elder, who has recently returned from the besieged enclave, reported that the few remaining hospitals in Gaza are overwhelmed with children and their parents, all of whom are bearing the ghastly wounds of war. He said that many of them were child amputees. As a parent of a critically sick child told me, our situation is pure misery. I don't know if we will make it through this, he said. Due to the total blockade imposed by the Zionist regime on the enclave and a dearth of anesthesia, electricity and running water, health workers are forced to perform these surgeries in unhygienic conditions without painkillers. It's not as if there is a natural disaster preventing anesthesia from entering Gaza. Palestinian Children's Relief Fund, PCRF founder Steve Sosby said in an interview with Democracy Now, he said, "It's absolutely unimaginable that this is happening in our modern world." He added that the number of child amputees was likely to grow because a lot of these kids have significant injuries that mean they will need amputations in the coming weeks and months. He said, not only were they amputated without anesthesia, but many of them were amputated in a very quick fashion. Around half of my operating list, which was around 10 to 12 cases every day, were children, said Dr. Ghassan Abu Sita, a London-based surgeon who traveled to Gaza to treat patients amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught, said in a press conference in November. He recalled, "One night at Al Ahli Hospital, I performed amputations on 6 children." In an interview with Middle East Eye, Sita said that having to perform these operations without anesthesia was one of the most difficult things I've had to do in my career. Prior to the current war on Gaza, 12% of Palestinian children aged 2 to 17 faced one or more functional difficulties, while 21% of households in Gaza include at least one member with physical or mental disabilities. According to PCRF, prior to the current hostilities, Gaza was already suffering from amputee crisis. The ongoing Israeli regime siege on the enclave, which tightly controls the flow of people, medical equipment, and pharmaceuticals in and out of the area, means timely evacuation of the wounded to better-equipped hospitals in the occupied West Bank is often impossible. The barriers to healthcare access are such that the UN defined individuals in need of medical referrals as a vulnerable group within the Palestinian population. According to PCRF, many Palestinians are at risk of osteomyelitis or bone infection following injury if medical treatment is delayed. The dearth of medical resources and restrictions on movement in the besieged strip means that many treatable injuries require amputation.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Qasem Soleimani was born on March the 11th, 1957, in the province of Kirman, situated in the south of the Islamic Republic of Iran. At the age of 13, the young Qasem left school and began working on a construction site in a different town to help support his family financially. Over the course of the next decade, he also took part in revolutionary activities against the regime of the Shah. In 1979, when Imam Ruhullah Khomeini led the Islamic Revolution to victory, Haj Qasem joined the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Despite minimal training, he showed great talent and natural aptitude and rose up the ranks quickly. The following year, in 1980, when Saddam's Iraqi army invaded Iran, a 23-year-old Qasim joined the battle, and as a company leader, he trained and led a group of volunteers from his home district of Kerman into battle. In a quote attributed to Haj Qasim, he says, "I entered the Iran-Iraq war on a 15-day mission and ended up staying until the end." He fought in multiple battles over the course of the war, receiving serious injuries in the Battle of Tariq al-Quds, close to the border with Iraq. After the end of the war, he was deployed in Kerman province, his area of birth, where he garnered a reputation as a formidable combatant against rampant drug smuggling in the region. In the late 90s, he was appointed as the head of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, a unit dedicated to liberating al-Quds, and spent the following years building up the organization's capabilities and relationships across the region. It was in this role as leader of the Quds Force that he assisted Lebanon in firstly expelling the Israeli occupation in the year 2000, and then in defeating them again during the July War of 2006. But perhaps his greatest victory was in being the person most responsible for the defeat of the Daesh terrorist group, who had taken over huge swaths of territory in Syria and Iraq in 2014. His leadership on the battlefield and his subsequent support for groups trying to expel occupying American forces from West Asia cemented him as a legend amongst the people of the region, while also putting him square in the crosshairs of the mass-murdering U.S. empire and its local lackeys.
December is the time of year that Christians worldwide celebrate the birth of the Messiah, Jesus, may peace and blessings be upon him. Celebrations in Bethlehem, the birthplace of Jesus, are considered holy because the passion and resurrection of Jesus happened inside the city's walls. Bethlehem is a Palestinian city in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, surrounded today by a massive concrete wall, military checkpoints, and illegal settlements.
It's imposing a system of control that I'm sure Jesus was very familiar of. If he's born today, he would be born on our side of the wall.
According to the Gospels, the most important features of Christianity have their origins in Jerusalem. The institution of the Eucharist took place while Jesus was celebrating Passover with his disciples in Jerusalem. Also, his crucifixion at the Golgotha, where Jesus remained calm, compassionate, and loving even in the face of death. And according to Christian belief, his resurrection 3 days later all happened in Jerusalem. In this way, Jerusalem constitutes a unique and holy city for Christianity. Other holy sites are associated with events from the Old Testament, the lives of Mary, John the Baptist, and the apostles, with endless more associated with later Christian saints, holy men and women, and local traditions. But Bethlehem will be a somber place this year, as the Christian of the three major churches, Greek Orthodox, Armenian, and Catholic, have stated they will not be celebrating.
This year is going to be totally different. There won't be any lights. We will not have the Christmas tree. We will be mourning those who are being slaughtered in Gaza. There's a deep atmosphere of grief here, and all the churches have decided to only have religious services for Christmas.
These holy places, the indigenous Christian community and pilgrims who come to visit from all over the world, have long been the subject of violence, harassment, and intimidation by the occupation forces who have not allowed the community to worship in peace. The Temple Mount is no exception, often the subject of brutality despite being considered a holy place. It is where Jesus was first presented as an infant to the temple and its people by his holy mother Maryam. It was also there where he famously taught elders of the community at the tender age of 13 and later threw out the money changers from the same temple grounds. Unfortunately, the percentage of Christians living in Bethlehem and in other occupied Palestinian territories has plummeted. With the community currently totaling under 2% of the population, the fear that Christians will one day no longer have a presence in Palestine is slowly becoming a reality. The reason is extremely clear for the indigenous worshipers.
The World Health Organization has once again sounded the alarm on deepening humanitarian and medical crisis in war-torn Gaza. It has called on the international community to take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing Palestinians in the besieged territory. According to the latest WHO assessments, Gaza has 13 partially functioning hospitals, 2 minimally functioning ones, and 21 that are not functioning at all.
There are actually no functional hospitals left in the north. Al-Ahli was the last one, but is now minimal functional. And still treating patients, but not admitting new ones, along with Al-Shifa, Al-Ada, and Al-Sahaba Hospital. So these hospitals are still sheltering also thousands of displaced people. At Al-Ahli, about 10 staff, all junior doctors and nurses, continue to provide basic first aid, pain management, as much as possible, wound care, and trauma stabilization services.
The Nasser Medical Complex, which is the most important referral hospital in southern Gaza, is partially functioning. The world body has expressed concern about reports of residential areas being ordered to evacuate around the hospital, which are extremely concerning. According to WHO reports and eyewitness accounts, when military activities intensify near the hospital, ambulances, patients, staff, and WHO and partners are unable to reach the complex. The world body has also said that it is working to strengthen and expand the existing struggling health system.
WHO will keep striving to supply health facilities in the northern Gaza, but without fuel, staff, and other essential needs, medicines, medicines won't make a difference, and all patients will die slowly and painfully.
It has also expressed concern about the fresh wave of displacement of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, who have been pushed by Israel to move to further south. It says the displacement of people will further strain health facilities in the south, which are already struggling to meet the population's immense needs. The WHO statement read, "This forced mass movement of people will also lead to more overcrowding, increased risk of infectious diseases, and make it even harder to deliver humanitarian aid. Most of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are grappling with terrible injuries, acute hunger, and severe risk of disease." WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom has also repeated a call on the international community to, quote, take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing the population of Gaza. The remarks come a day after the WHO staff went on a high-risk mission to deliver humanitarian supplies to the Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza and Al-Amal Palestine Red Crescent Society in southern Gaza. Both hospitals serve as shelters for displaced Palestinians seeking safety amid relentless Israeli bombardment. At Al-Shifa Hospital, a reported 50,000 people are sheltering, while 14,000 others are at Al-Amal.
Seeing children, women, young men, old men and women, people bleeding out. I, at the same time yesterday at Al-Aqsa, I saw a woman who had multiple gunshot wounds. An attempt was made to refer her, and she was referred back because she was bleeding so heavily. So, I mean, there's blood everywhere in these hospitals at the moment. We're seeing almost only trauma cases come through the door, and at a scale that's quite difficult to believe. It's a bloodbath, as we said before. It's carnage.
They have been injured and have been in the hospital for 10 days. As soon as the Israeli troops withdrew, I rushed to take them. As you can see, they suffer from total burns for no reason. They were left with no food or water and no care. There are other injured members of my family, but I wasn't able to carry them. After I arrived at the hospital, I witnessed massive destruction, an indescribable scene. Patients are scattered in every corner, beds are overturned, and medical material are damaged.
Comments come as Israel is pressing ahead with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. From corpses lying unattended on the streets, to hospitals and schools reduced to rubble, to children made orphans and tens of thousands of people rendered homeless, the gory events unfolding in the besieged Gaza Strip since October 7 are a textbook example of genocide and ethnic cleansing. The death toll in the coastal territory since the Israeli regime launched its indiscriminate aerial and ground attacks nearly 3 months ago is now over 21,000, most of them children and women. almost all refugee camps have been rendered uninhabitable due to random strikes, forcing the majority of the population to sleep under the open sky amid heavy winds and heavy downpours. The barbaric attacks were only meant to give an image of victory to its defeated army, which has only succeeded in killing unarmed civilians and destroying civilian facilities.
This is really the worst thing that U.S. and Israel could do to Palestinians. The genocide is and the heinous war crimes are gone unnoticed.
The Zionist Israeli entity intensified its aggression on Gaza while keeping one eye on Hezbollah in Lebanon and the other on the West Bank, primarily due to its strategic proximity. Neither the entity nor the United States of America foresaw that Yemen, which has been at war for years without a practical resolution, would turn into a new front. In November, the Yemeni armed forces declared war on the Zionist entity in support of the resistance in Gaza, presenting a significant and unwelcome surprise for the entity. Yemen initiated missile and drone attacks on targets in the Zionist Israeli port of Eilat, overlooking the Red Sea. However, the Yemeni armed forces did not stop there and announced the imposition of what could be described as a naval blockade on the entity. It appears that there are significant losses due to the Yemeni missiles, prompting the Pentagon in the first week of December to announce a plan to form a naval force to so-called protect international navigation in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait and the Red Sea. However, despite the availability of European countries' warships and frigates, they do not express great enthusiasm to join this force. Well, that is mainly due to the fact that European countries do not possess a large naval fleet. Warships are distributed between protecting the coasts of these countries and positioning near Ukraine in anticipation of any developments in the Russian-Ukrainian war. On the other hand, these countries are concerned that if they participate in confronting the Yemeni armed forces in their Gaza support operations, their commercial ships passing through the Bab el-Mandeb and the Red Sea could themselves become targets for the Yemenis. In the meantime, despite the Pentagon's threat to respond to the Yemenis, the Yemeni armed forces daily reaffirm their determination to continue targeting Israeli entity ships and ships bound towards occupied Palestine until the Zionist entity ends the genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The matter is no longer limited to imposing a blockade on Zionist Israeli ports. The geostrategic battle and its escalating events are shaking the world. The closure of the Red Sea to ships colluding with the enemy turns into a heroic festival, teaching the U.S. and Zionist Israel harsh lessons and threatening them with more successive blows capable of breaking their alliances and coercive global policies. These strikes establish a new stage of resistance given the expansion of its military operations and the development of its capabilities to combat malicious international hegemony. There is a clear evolution in the history of resistance post-October 7 and after the introduction of the equation of the Red Sea and the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman.
Christians and Christianity are under attack in Gaza and Palestine more generally. Zionist ideology is not just anti-Muslim, it is anti-Christian too. What is the common factor that links Muslims and Christians in Palestine? They're Palestinian. So it's no surprise that the Zionists are making sure to destroy churches as well as mosques. On October the 19th, Israel bombed the Church of St. Porphyrius, Gaza's oldest, killing at least 18 people. The church is said to be the third oldest Christian church in the world, with the current building having been constructed by the Crusaders in the 1150s or 1160s. A church was built on the site as early as 425 AD. 2 days earlier, an explosion at Al-Ahli Arab Hospital, an Anglican institution located a few blocks away, killed and injured hundreds, according to Palestinian health authorities. The evidence is beginning to mount that the attacks on specifically Christian targets are themselves a specific genocide, contained within the larger genocide aimed at Muslims and indeed all Palestinians. On December 16th, the Zionists directly targeted a Christian convent. An Israeli army sniper assassinated two Christian women, Nahed and her daughter Samar, inside the parish of the Holy Family in Gaza on Saturday, said the Latin Patriarchate's media office. One of the women fell while trying to rescue the other. Seven others were injured while attempting to help. Gunfire was directed at them inside the walls of the monastery, and there was no resistance in the area, it added. An Israeli artillery vehicle also targeted the Monastery of the Sisters of Mother Teresa in Gaza City, which shelters more than 54 disabled individuals within the church walls. The Zionist attack also destroyed the fuel tank, the power generator, and the solar panels, in addition to extensive damage that rendered the place unsuitable for habitation or providing care for people with disabilities. On January the 26th this year, a mob of Israeli settlers attacked an Armenian bar in the Christian quarter of the Old City of Jerusalem, shouting, "Death to Arabs, death to Christians." At the beginning of October, a video emerged of ultra-Orthodox settlers in Al-Quds spitting on Christian pilgrims. Armed and violent settlers are also in the process of attempting to liquidate the Armenian quarter in Al-Quds, and with it, the wider Christian presence, which has been there continuously since the 4th century. Only 800 to 1,000 Christians are believed to still live in Gaza, constituting the oldest Christian community in the world, dating back to the 1st century.
This year, Christmas celebrations are cancelled in Bethlehem, and for obvious reasons. It's impossible to celebrate while our people in Gaza are going through a genocide.
It's no wonder the church in Palestine has cancelled Christmas.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
فدعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك. ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرج.
السلام عليكم dear listeners of IRB English Radio, brothers and sisters. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Xavier International Schools Network. I'm really happy, inshallah. Today also we have Brother Fawad Haider and Hussein Akbari. Assalamu alaikum, Hussein. How are you?
I'm fine.
Thank
Thanks.
You so much. Thank you. And Fawad, how are you?
Salam, sir. I'm fine too.
Alhamdulillah. So everyone is fine, brothers and sisters. Hope you are fine as well, inshallah. Inshallah, today we will talk about ayah 125 of Surah Al-An'am on page 144.
Four.
Top of the page, yes?
Yes.
So, brothers and sisters, turn to page 144, ayah 125 of Surah Al-An'am, top of the page. Let's listen to the recitation.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Faman yuridillahu an yahdiyahu yashrah sadrahu lil-Islam. وَمَن يُرِدْ أَن يُضِلَّهُ يَجْعَلْ صَدْرَهُ ضَيِّقًا حَرَجًا كَأَنَّمَا يَصَّعَّدُ فِي السَّمَاءِ كَذَلِكَ يَجْعَلُ اللَّهُ الرِّجْسَ عَلَى الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ.
Nice recitation, mashallah. I will read it quickly, and then Hussein will read it for us, okay? A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Faman yuridillahu an yahdiyahu yashrah sadrahu lil islam. Read it, Hussein. A'udhu billah, bismillah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم فمن يرد الله أن يهديه يشرح صدره للإسلام.
أحسن. ما شاء الله ما شاء الله. فمن يرد. What does Allah Almighty say? Fawad? Allah Almighty says فمن يرد الله أن يهديه. Whomever. Whomever. No matter anyone. Whomever Allah desires to guide, yahdiyahu, yashrah sadrahu lil Islam. He opens, Allah Almighty opens his chest, his breast to Islam. What does it say? He says, look, Allah Almighty has given you free will.
Yes.
To choose the right path or the wrong path. Inna hadaynahu sabil. We have shown the path. Okay, to the human being. Imma shakiran, either he is thankful to that and he goes towards the right path, or imma kafura, or he's not thankful and he goes the wrong
question,
path.
Sir.
Yes.
Being guided also means like we have shown you the path, or it means that we have shown you the path and then we have guided you.
Look, sometimes, okay, of course Allah Almighty has given us free will, okay? And also, he has sent his prophets as well, his apostles as well, okay, to guide us. So you have free will to either listen to the prophets, follow them, or reject them, okay? And sometimes there are some people that all of a sudden, they were really bad people, okay, in a wrong path. But once you see they are on the right path, they are really strongest followers of the Prophet, for example, okay? It's because sometimes you have done something in your life, okay? You have done something good in your life, no matter you are believer or non-believer, but you have done something. And because of that, Allah Almighty holds your hand one day. Allah Almighty helps you one day, okay? For example, you might have helped a poor person in your community while you don't believe in God. Okay? You don't believe in God, but you are a great person in your community. One day Allah Almighty might hold your hand and help you to be guided. His blessing. So blessing of Allah Almighty can overtake anyone. Blessings of Allah Almighty. Okay? Special blessing. Alright? Of course, we have in the meaning of Rahim, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Rahim means he is kind, he is blessing, he's merciful to special people. Special Muslims, special believers, okay? But also sometimes Allah Almighty blesses people, okay? All of a sudden, like it's His own wisdom.
Rahman.
Yeah, because He might see some capacity in that person. He might see like this person deserves to be guided. He blesses him. Even, okay? He himself is not a good person, okay? The person. So sometimes Allah Almighty blesses us. So, يَشْرَحْ صَدْرَهُ لِلْإِسْلَامِ. He opens, Allah Almighty opens his breast to Islam, his chest to Islam. وَمَنْ يُرِدْ أَنْ يُضِلَّهُ يَجْعَلْ صَدْرَهُ ضَيِّقًا حَرَجًا. Can you read it, Hussein?
وَمَنْ يُرِدْ أَنْ يُضِلَّهُ يَجْعَلْ صَدْرَهُ ضَيِّقًا حَرَجًا.
أحسنت. And whomever Allah Almighty desires to lead astray, it's easy for Allah Almighty. If Allah Almighty wants to deprive someone of his blessings, okay, if Allah Almighty wants to take his blessings from someone, it's easy for Allah Almighty. Allah can do it. Yes or no?
Yes.
There have been a lot of people, okay, who've had a lot of blessings in their life, but because they misused the blessings of Allah Almighty, they were deprived. وَمَنْ يُرِدْ أَيُّضِلَّهُ. And whomever he desires to lead astray, يَجْعَلْ صَدَرُهُ ضَيِّقًا حَرَجًا. So up to this point, let's mention to the Tajweed Rus, then we'll continue.
قُرْآنِي فِي قَلْبِي دَوْمًا يغمرني من فيض ضياء آيات
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's Recite the Quran.
So, فَمَنْ يُرِدْ. How do you read it for?
فَمَنْ
يُرِدْ. Yes? You merge them. إِدْغَام. Yes? What?
Yes.
What?
إِدْغَام.
Yeah, the rule إِدْغَام. فَمَنْ يُرِدِ اللَّهُ Again.
Yes.
Again, إِدْغَام. أَنْ يَهْدِيَهُ يَشْرَحْ صَدْرَهُ لِلْإِسْلَامِ وَمَنْ يُرِدْ. من يريد again.
Again.
ومن يريد أن يضله. How do you read it, Hussein?
ومن يريد أن يضله.
أحسن. أن يضله يجعل
قلقلة.
Echo the sound. يجعل صد. Again, echo the sound. صدره ضيقا. And whomever Allah Almighty desires to lead astray, he makes his breast narrow and straightened. Okay? Narrow, not to accept, for example. Not to have this ability to accept. He will be deprived from this ni'mah. ضَيِّقًا حَرَجًا. If you stop. حَرَجًا. If you connect it to كَأَنَّمَا حَرَجًا إِخْفَى. Read Hussein. كَأَنَّمَا يَصَّعَّدُ فِي السَّمَاءِ.
كأنما يصعد في السماء.
أحسن ما شاء الله. في السماء. The mad is wajib, but if you stop here, because Jim says you can stop or you can continue, you ignore the mad. كأنما يصعد في السماء. Not that six count, okay? Don't prolong it for that. So as if he were climbing to a height. So, كَذَلِكَ يَجْعَلُ اللَّهُ الرِّجْسَ عَلَى الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ. Thus, does Allah lay spiritual defilement or rijs, which means impurity, kind of, yes, defilement, on those who do not have faith. This means they will be led astray. Okay? So, read it, Hussein.
كَذَلِكَ كذلك يجعل الله الرجس على الذين لا يؤمنون.
يجعل الله الرجس. Yes. Okay. So these are the important tajweed rules. They are not very difficult. I will be reciting once this ayah. Make sure, inshallah, you repeat after me, Hussein and Fawad. Brothers and sisters, listen and practice. Ready, guys?
Yes.
Yes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
فمن يرد الله أن يهديه يشرح صدره للإسلام.
فمن يرد الله أن يهديه يشرح صدره للإسلام.
أحسن. Extend the sound of إدغام. ومن يرد. ومن longer. ومن. Okay, two counts.
ومن يرد أن يضله يجعل صدره ضيقا حرجا.
ومن
يرد أن يضله يجعل صدره ضيقا حرجا.
ضيقا حرجا كأنما يصعد في السماء.
ضيقا حرجا كأنما يصعد في السماء.
كذلك يجعل الله الرجس على الذين لا يؤمنون.
كذلك يجعل الله الرجس على الذين لا يؤمنون.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
أحسن. Thank you so much. Allah bless you, Brother Hussein Akbari and Fawad Haider. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters, for being with us up to this time. That's all from us for today. Hope you stay safe, inshallah. Stay with IRIB English Radio. Thanks to IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools Network. See you. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad وعجل فرجهم.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور. آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه. لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به. هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
شهيد القدس.
Part 1.
The saddest day in Iran since Imam Khomeini, God's blessing upon his soul, passed away. Millions of people swarmed the streets of the Iranian capital, Tehran. They were filled with both rage and grief. Qasem Soleimani was assassinated. Not the leader or president or any other state official delivered a speech to the crowd that day. There was only one thing in the field, and that was the exact same thing that outshone all his medals of honor. Tehran, February 4th, 1998. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution took part in a ceremony to promote a number of the officers of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, the IRGC. One of those officers was Brigadier General Soleimani. The Brigadier General was born in 1957 in Kerman. He was assigned as commander of the Quds force that was responsible for supporting resistance movements in the world. Soleimani was at the helm of the forces for over two decades. Although he stepped out of darkness after major developments in the region in recent years, his covert efforts to support Palestine formed the biggest part of his life. For this reason, for Palestinian factions, Soleimani's name was synonymous with Iran. The founders and leaders of the groups who are wanted or behind the scenes have testified to this man's historical role. Many things have changed since then. On February 17, 1979, only a few days after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, Yasser Arafat traveled to Tehran at the head of a Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, delegation. 2 days later, the Islamic Revolution that had just achieved victory announced that the Zionist regime's embassy that had been established when the former Shah was in power would change into the Palestinian embassy. After a few months, Ayatollah Khomeini designated the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as World Quds Day. A few years later, after the emergence of Hezbollah in Lebanon, Palestine was placed at its heart. At the same time, Islamic and nationalist groups in Palestine, at the pinnacle of the First Intifada, which was named the Stone Intifada, reared their heads. Hamas and Islamic Jihad were on top of the factions. Soleimani stepped up its efforts. The Stone Intifada put Israel in a tight spot. Participants in the Madrid conference sought to put out the Intifada by making efforts for reconciliation. Iran voiced its opposition to the Madrid conference and, in reaction, held a large international conference to support the Intifada. The conference created an opportunity to boost ties between the resistance movements in Palestine and Lebanon. Imad Mughnieh was one of the participants in the conference. On December 17, 1992, the occupying Israeli regime's army arrested hundreds of members of the Islamic Jihad and Hamas in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and sent them into exile outside Palestine. Those who were exiled were sent to a camp in Marj el Zur, the western Bekaa in Lebanon. On September 13, 1993, the Oslo Accord sent the Palestine Liberation Organization out of the realm of resistance. Resistance factions rejected the Oslo Accords, and in order to confront that, they gathered in the format of a coalition whose existence was announced in Damascus. The gathering was known as the Meeting of the Ten Groups. The vocal opposition accompanied the official stance of Tehran and Damascus. Resistance groups chose the option of resistance. But the Zionist grudge did not stop. The massacre at the Ebrahimi Mosque in February of 1994 was a reminder of the previous massacres like Deir Yassin. The resistance movement retaliated against the move at the heart of the Zionist regime. While the resistance in southern Lebanon had already inflicted serious pain on the enemy, Its support for Palestine was a counterbalance to all of the consequences of the Oslo Accords.
On October 26, 1995, Mossad assassinated the Secretary General of Islamic Jihad, Fatih Shaghaghi, in Malta. 3 weeks later, an engineer who was known as the mastermind of all operations by the Al-Qassam Brigades was assassinated. Yet, the operations by the resistance did not stop.
In March of 1996, the U.S. supported Israel to hold an international conference in support of the regime, which drew widespread support by Arab leaders. The conference was following two goals: eradicating Hezbollah and bringing the Palestinian resistance down to its knees. The Lebanese resistance, namely Hezbollah, in the April 1996 conflict, resisted against Israel without any major challenges. After those events, Israel resorted to military options once again. In September of 1997, the Mossad failed in an assassination attempt that targeted Khaled Mashal, head of the Hamas Political Bureau in Jordan. Botched operation turned into a historical opportunity. A few days later, Sheikh Ahmad Yassin was released from an Israeli prison in a swap deal with two detained agents who were involved in the assassination attempt on Khaled Mashal. Several weeks after the developments, some news reached Palestine and Al-Quds from Tehran. Everything was about to change. Brigadier General Qasem Soleimani was designated as the Quds Force commander. Soleimani immediately held a meeting with the commanders of the resistance movements in Iran and Syria. Haj Qasem left Tehran for Damascus and held a meeting with the leaders of the Palestinian resistance groups. A few months later, the Islamic Republic of Iran held a historical meeting with Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, the founder of the Hamas movement. It was a historical meeting with the Iranian leader where they envisaged the plan for the future. The man who set the stage for the meeting behind the scenes was Qasem Soleimani. In 1999, there were rumors that Israel had plans to withdraw from Lebanon. As a consequence, in case of the Israeli withdrawal, the Palestinian issue was up for negotiations on the table for the Quds Force. Miles away, the aftershocks of the spiderweb speech was felt in Palestine. Everyone witnessed the first Arab victory against the Zionist regime. The speech turned into an outcry of anger in Palestine.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.